Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Crime and Investigations, I Am a Killer is a brand new 10-part true crime documentary series produced in partnership with Netflix by an excellent production team including me, Danny Tipping.
And me, Tom Adams. Each episode tells the story of a prisoner convicted of capital murder and sentenced to death.
In this podcast, we'll be going into the making of each episode, revealing what it was like to produce this incredible series.
A lot of things happened, you know, in the year, kind of all around that event. Everybody in my life, like, they didn't believe it. Not Robert. Not the Robert we know. But a lot of people didn't know me as well as they thought they did either. There was no conversation about what was going to happen when we got to where we were going. Things had taken a terrible turn, and it just got worse.
Robert Schaefer, along with a friend, ended up getting a lift with a couple of guys they met late one night, which ended up in the murder of the two guys that gave him a lift. And this film is called Hunted. Do you want to explain why?
I think it relates to Robert Schaefer was arrested, as you say, for the killing of two guys that essentially he had no relationship to. In the investigation and subsequent court case, it comes out that he has targeted two gay guys in a park well known for as a place where gay guys meet up, and they've effectively gone out, him and his accomplice at the time, hunted down and targeted two guys and killed them.
I mean, they were just the two who were there that night. Yeah. There was no recognition. There was no sense of, you know, these are people we want to kill. They were there. It was awful, awful bad luck. It was circumstances.
And he's convicted of both killings and spent the last 28 years in jail. And he's, Robert Schaefer, up until that point, there's a quote, and I'll paraphrase, and I'll probably get it wrong, but, you know, at the time, as Robert Schaefer says himself, everybody said that, can't believe Bob Schaefer did that. And he says, you know, quite bluntly, I guess they didn't know me that well. And it's, you know, that, to me, sort of really live with me, that he doesn't fit the bill, perhaps, or at the time didn't fit the bill of somebody you might expect to commit this type of crime.
But equally, he and, I mean, his sister talks very powerfully about the masks that her brother wore, and she says if one mask slipped, there was another one underneath. I mean, not to excuse what he did, obviously, but he had a very, very difficult time, and I think he as a child, and his coping strategies were simply not to let anyone know the real Robert Schaefer. And I'd say he seems so far away from what you would think of as a convicted killer when you see him on screen. He doesn't fit the bill.
Yet, you know, talks very openly about what he did, and certainly doesn't deny or excuse himself, I don't think. But you'll find, as we interview friends, relatives, and those involved, that you know, he had a very, you know, he's got a very complicated and troubling backstory. Again, that doesn't excuse the violent crimes in any way, shape, or form, but it does paint a much more broader picture than perhaps we picked up initially from the crime reports and the court reports. And like, as I've said before, And as in all these films, you know, it's not as straightforward as you might first expect. And Robert Schaefer's been in prison for, you know, best part of 3 decades. And he's had a lot of time to think about what he's done and why he did it. You know, and again, not these films aren't necessarily an easy watch. They're quite challenging in some respects. You know, we're talking about 10 horrendous crimes with really significant consequences. And these are stories being retold from the guys that committed those crimes and in most instances have been in prison for the best chunk of their life, reliving, replaying and having the first opportunity, really, after all that time, to tell those stories. So they're not, you know, and certainly it's the case with Robert Schaefer. This is, you know, they're quite a challenging, it's quite a challenging film, I think.
I thought that if I pled guilty and asked for the death penalty, it would bring light to my case, that people would sympathize and it would cast me in a favorable light. And the old saying goes that be careful what you ask for. I asked for it and the judge gave it to me.
The team arrived and were shown to the room you'd be filming in, and you had to make it work. There were no alternatives or other options. We couldn't. It would have been great to be able to wander around and find the most visually appealing backdrop within the prison.
But a production team being a production team, they would have spent the whole hour wondering, you know, we could do it here or we could do that. And then,
I really like the light playing off these.
Yeah. But
these
we got what we were given, or the team got what they were given and made the best of it. And I think actually they're extraordinary looking interviews for the restrictions they had. There were times when we had lights. When you're interviewing someone, when you're lighting an interview, you try and control everything. So you're controlling the light, the sound, the people who are coming in and out, whatever that might be. Here we had no control and we did what we could with what we had. And there were lights on automatic sensors, so when people walked past them, you'd get a strip of fluorescence.
Humming fluorescent bulbs and air conditioning units.
There was a drinks machine whose cooling fan would kick in every 5 minutes with a, you know, that we had to try and lose from the... So we had no control.
Technical
we did
challenges,
what we could.
But again, it was... Yeah. The fact that we're even in there, that we got the time with these prisoners in these particular institutions, all of which are operating, you know, the highest security, maximum security prisons in America, and that we had a team of 3 people on our camera kit, and you know, in there, we would have filmed in the broom cupboard had, you know, if that's what they'd offered us.
Yeah, the point was to get their story, and there was an acceptance that we got the best that we could do, and again, the channels were
that,
great
that
about
said,
that.
I mean, you know, not to downplay it, Tom. I mean, I think the interviews look extraordinary. I think the lighting's beautiful, the setting, and we've made a virtue in most instances. In fact, nearly all of the backdrop and the framing of the
absolutely
the glass
absolutely, they do.
And the you know, the prison bars or the, you know, the setting we're in. I think, really, you know, not that we had any choice and it wasn't our first concern, but provide an incredible backdrop to the to the interviews, and they look exactly like they are. Those are in situ prison interviews with prisoners in high security prison facilities. And I think we've made a virtue out of it. And I love the shots of the guys shot through glass, framed by the by the window in the interview, so with the phones on either side.
They could have been too lit. Mm. Almost, which removed them from where they were.
Yeah. We wanted to, I mean, it's an accurate representation of what you get when you turn up in one of them. Yeah. I mean, most of us, I would imagine, you know, most people watching, you know, on Crime Investigation won't have been a visitor in a maximum security prison in Texas, Florida, or, you know, anywhere else for that matter. So, you know, these are extraordinary places, but they look like, it looks like a Hollywood film, you know, when he's set up with that frame and the phones on the wall. I wanted to make one and, you know, with a phone and take it to all our interviews. They looked amazing.
So I just reached out to him and, you know, Robert, you spent a long time in prison. I've read up a little things and it sounds like you got the short end of the stick. And if you ever have a chance to get free, we're okay with that. I almost felt a little bit sorry for the guy. Doing something when you're 19, and being known for the worst thing you ever did in your life. That's all he's ever known for. Just want to let him know we forgive him.
We interviewed Robert twice, as we did with all our inmates, and they are in two different rooms. You know, not something we're expecting. I think in most instances, out of the rest of the series, we're in the same place both times. We turn up and interview our interview in the same either visiting room or interview room. Slightly different in Rob Schaefer's case. Not something that the team were expected or I think necessarily prepared for. You know, you turn up, you're shown to a room, you've got your allotted time to set up the kit and equipment, get your interview and then get back out again. The fact that he isn't interviewed is purely because that was the room or the facility they had available that day. You know, and the team just had to roll with it.
I don't think he knew the impact that his letter would have. It was a life-changing moment. I remember the date I received the letter. It started a process that I was on my way to, but I needed someone to kind of give me, I didn't need a nudge, I needed a push. And his letter did that. So the kindness that he showed me led me to finally do something good. Telling the truth is never easy when you've lied. But to tell the truth about killing two people is even worse. And I'm grateful that he did that.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The team, you know, we're working, Ned and Tom work with the directors, you know, with the, there were absolutely key points that we wanted to establish. But, you know, we knew we had to spend some time getting to know the inmate before we hit them with the big questions about what, you know, what they did, why they did it, how do they feel about that, which essentially those are the key points that we...
Yeah, I think there were... I mean, we start this off with saying we had hugely experienced producer directors who had interviewed people from all walks of life on all kinds of subjects and really knew their game. But I think all three of them were, you know, challenged in various ways by this. That first interview was easier because it was a case of letting our interviewees talk, letting our inmates talk to tell their story. That's what we wanted. We wanted their story. We just needed to make sure they gave us enough information on the relevant bits. I mean, all parts of their story are interesting, but we needed to know details on certain bits. So that's what our PDs, our producer directors, were pushing for then. We didn't really prioritize questions, and very often a question can lead to a very different answer. So it was, as it were, answer-driven or content-driven rather than question-driven. But we knew that we had producer directors who knew the story they wanted to tell or knew that part of the story that they wanted to tell and in their own mind were ticking off elements as they went along. It was more difficult for that second interview when we had interviewed the friends, relatives, arresting, whoever it might have been, to tell the other side of the story or another side of the story. And then we were going back to interview our inmate again and question them on discrepancies in their answers and others' answers or question details or gaps in the story or just differences of opinion. And they were the tricky interviews because inevitably there were going to be disagreements and it was challenging these people on their stories that maybe they had not rehearsed, because I don't necessarily feel that they were rehearsed for us, but this internal dialogue that I felt that each of these inmates must have had to come to terms with what had happened to them. And all of a sudden, we weren't putting people on trial. We were just trying to get to the bottom of people's stories and understand why there were differences in stories. And it was probing those differences that was more challenging. Very occasionally, we, Ned and I, would talk to the directors and say, we feel these are the key elements in this story, and we need more information. We need to understand his response to this, or his take on this, or you know, this series of events, whatever it might be. But very often, our directors were hugely experienced. They had a good understanding of the story they could see unfolding before them, and really knew what they wanted from that second interview. The big challenge was when to start asking those questions. We'd love to hear what you think of the series. Comment on Facebook or Twitter with hashtag IAmAKiller. And don't forget to rate us and subscribe to this podcast series.
The IAmAKiller podcast is hosted by Tom Adams and Danny Tipping and is produced by Sam Pearson, Steph Nardilli and Matt Talent, with editing by Susanna Lawrence.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What makes a stalker tick? I'm Ruchira Sharma, inviting you to delve into Anatomy of a Stalker, an original crime and investigation podcast.
That police officer's partner drove to my house to warn me that this man would kill me.
She'd look in the rearview mirror, out from the back seat would up pop the ex-husband.
Don't miss Anatomy of a Stalker. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts. The hunt begins now.